Winchester Talking News, Friday, 30th of September 2022. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962861229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are asylum plans for City Hotel dumped, new plans for Debenhams, and thousands enjoy Marathon Fantastic Day. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Asylum plan for City Hotel dumped. Asylum seekers will not now be coming to Winchester Hotel, as a deal to take over up to 160 beds at the venue came crashing down after details were published online by the Hampshire Chronicle. The Home Office had earmarked the Winchester Royal Hotel in St Peter Street as a potential place to house asylum seekers in up to 160 beds. Documents from the Home Office, seen by the Hampshire Chronicle, confirmed that the deal had come to an end. A Home Office official wrote, "It has become clear that we have been unable to secure this hotel, and we will therefore not be using it to accommodate destitute asylum seekers." The hotel is owned by Castlebridge Hospitality Group, which also owns Holiday Inn Winchester and five other hotels across the country. Castlebridge boss Simon Hall categorically denied that the hotel would enter into any arrangements with the Home Office, despite the Home Office involving local authorities such as Hampshire County Council Winchester, City Council and other agencies. Mr. Hall said, "It is certainly not our intention to use the hotel for that purpose." He also moved to reassure people with existing bookings that it was business as usual. Mr. Hall said they had received no contact from the Home Office and that they had refused offers for similar schemes for the Holiday Inn Winchester and the Hilton Garden Inn Birmingham. Mr. Hall said that housing asylum seekers was not something the hotel group would consider doing, despite rival hotel groups setting up deals such as ones in Andover and Southsea. Paperwork seen by the Chronicle shows that the Home Office had its sights on the hotel for as early as this Friday, September the 30th. The news had come as a shock to some locals, who feared for tourism in the city. Previous hotel owner Tony Smith, who owned the hotel from 1992 until 2002, labelled it a terrible idea. Winchester MP Steve Bryan had also voiced concerns, and he welcomed the reversal. He said, "It was clear from my briefing with Home Office officials last Friday that the owners were willing to see their hotel used, but they've obviously had a change of heart. For many reasons, including those raised by the police and local authorities, I think on balance that was a wise decision. Winchester has shown, with Hong Kong nationals, Afghans and our Ukrainian friends, it's got a big heart when it comes to welcoming people. But this would have been on a different scale, and it would certainly have challenged some, as principle and reality collide. We will continue to more than do our bit as a city for those seeking sanctuary."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, the headline is "New Plans for Debenhams." The long-empty Debenhams department store in Winchester looks set to be converted for the hospitality trade. The High Street store, empty since 2021 and owned by Surrey County Council, is now being earmarked as a three restaurants or cafes with hotel rooms at the back off Market Lane. News will be a blow to local people who dreamed of an indoor market or division into stores for independent traders. Covent Garden-based property agents AGMG says the plan is for the three-storey, 50,408 square feet department store to be divided on the ground floor into three units of 2,848 square feet, 3,188 square feet, and 2,948 square feet. The predicted rent charges are £115,000 for Unit 1, £125,000 for Unit 2, and £120,000 for Unit 3. A source told the Chronicle there is strong interest in opening in the city for the food and drink sector, including Burger King, Nando's and Five Guys.
OK, let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
That is, thousands enjoy Marathontastic Day. Thousands of people took part in Winchester's half marathon and 10K run last Sunday, September the 25th, making it a huge success. The Winchester Marathon gave the city a special mood on Sunday morning as the streets were turned into good-natured running tracks. This was also the first time that organisers Rhys Leisure introduced its new Winchester Hilly 10K run alongside the popular half marathon and fun run. The new distance run initially followed the half marathon route before peeling off round many of the city's landmarks and into the hills. The event brought additional competitors and their supporters into Winchester, promoting the city's many charms and adding to a fun day out for friends and families. Our photographer, Stuart Martin, was at the starting and finishing points of the marathon to capture the action. And not surprisingly, this is surrounded by photographs of the marathon, and they are clearly at the start and finish. The one at the start is just outside what used to be Debenhams, as mentioned, and there is a massive crowd of runners. How you can ever run when squashed between so many people, I can't imagine. And then it moves on to the people at the end who have reached the end, and they were all beaming high with their arms held high in the air because they've managed to make it. In some in costumes, there's Where's Wally with a red and white striped jumper and a red and white bobble hat and black glasses, beaming away. But also one of the winning runner, who seems to be completely ahead of anybody else. There's nobody behind her. And I think he's the only one not smiling for some reason.
Now we're going to go on to death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Belgarum diary, first person and editorial comment. We'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Hampton, Michael Hampton. He's a former florist and fruiterer, and he died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. Helen, Julie Helen, aged 56. And Mitchell Moore, Shirley Mitchell Moore, peacefully after a short illness, aged 93. And now we'll go on to Christian comment, read by Heather.
Christian comment is written by Liz Tatum, and it's headlined Understanding Suffering. Our Old Testament reading today was one of my favourites, as it tells a very human tale of suffering and endurance. It is from the book of Job. I like the beginning. All the angels are summoned to the feet of God, and the company includes Satan. "What have you been doing, Satan?" asks God. "I've been roaming the earth, going back and forth on it," says Satan. Job chapter 1, verses 1 to 12. I always want to add, "and looking for trouble," because that is what Satan does. I imagine him as a thug, wandering about, looking where he can stir it up. After a conversation about Job and the blessings of his life and character, God allows Satan to go off and torment Job with troubles, with a bit of a bet that Job will not curse God. The rest is well known. Job loses everything, family, beasts, home, and his health. He spends a long time, many years probably, sitting under a tree discussing all of this with friends, and does not, of course, curse his God. He laments and mourns and wonders why. In the end, everything is restored to him. Before hearing this reading this morning, I had been with a group of friends where we have all suffered similar loss in our lives. One of them commented to the people we were presenting to that our experiences had become like gold dust that we now offer through our work of lived experience. Difficulties and loss are part of the human life. Job's were extreme, but he kept his faith in a God who is in control. The outcome of the conversation between God and Satan was never in question. God knows us and knows exactly how we will react. He does not test us. He knows the answer. He gives us the opportunity to grow and give through our own endurance. We can turn our brokenness into gold dust and give back to others. The greatest act of brokenness was the crucifixion of Jesus, the Son of God. On the cross, that greatest of sufferings, Jesus asked God why he had abandoned him. That's how bad it was, that the man God doubted himself and questioned what was going on that he had to suffer so much. The Gospels all tell us that the answer was in the resurrection of Jesus. God could not be killed. His light was not to be put out. He lived and still lives in a new and eternal body and opened the gate for us to follow on. Prince William, reflecting on his love for his grandmother, said that she walked beside him during the saddest of days in his life. God will do that for us, and we can do it for others. Walking beside others often feels like not much, but it is a very powerful gift to give, and exactly what Job's friends did. They sat under the tree, listened and talked. We might not understand suffering, but we all have it in us to befriend and walk the journey with others.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, here's an amusing letter from Paul Hickey. Its headline is Happy Birthday. Regarding the 250th anniversary of the Hampshire Chronicle, I've been looking at the first edition of the Hampshire Chronicle, printed in 1772, and a lot of the editions since. Here are some of the headlines from the first edition and subsequent ones. Cliff Richard releases his new song. Peasant stuck up a tree. Consultation begins for the redevelopment of Silver Hill in Winchester. King George III visits Winchester. He's mad that the high street is so small and narrow. Is this a city or a village, he says. Captain James Cook begins his second voyage. So, send your views to the Hampshire Chronicle by carrier pigeon. Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And Andrew Tibbetts writes, Markets off. I was appalled to discover that the last two Winchester farmers' markets have been cancelled. It must be so very sad for the stallholders with fresh produce to sell, and very annoying for their willing customers who've wasted time needlessly getting to the ghost market. Surely we could use the car park where it was originally held when it started, if there is a competing function in the High Street. And that was from Andrew Tibbetts, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And the next one is read by Heather.
Emotional service. Simon Lever writes, I attended the service at Winchester Cathedral on Monday, September the 19th, the date of Her Majesty's state funeral. I can say the atmosphere was one of sadness, but also a sense of togetherness as mourners openly exchanged and shared their thoughts and feelings. Saying farewell to our treasured Queen Elizabeth II, there was much emotion, watery eyes, some openly weeping. The funeral was broadcast live by the BBC and presented via the cathedral's screens. Members of the clergy and mourners sang psalms in reverence. Ultimately, the national anthem was sung by all. God save the King. A most memorable and unforgettable service. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And Neil Spurgeon talks about what he says is an excellent day. I travelled to Winchester last Saturday to take in the various offerings from the Heritage Open Days programme. Upon arrival, I collected the city trail map for the information centre, handy to the bus station, which directed my steps to complete a thorough investigation of so many unusual and different places across the city, as well as the trail points, including both the interesting items in your two shop windows. I also investigated the amazing Great Hall, the West Gate, on a perfect day because from the roof I could actually see King Alfred's statue, the definition of perfect Winchester weather. I also took in the amazing Peninsula Barracks, the cathedral, opened specifically for the Books of Condolence rather than for Heritage Open Days, but a treat all the same, and a stroll along the river. After a lovely lunch, I wandered over to Winchester College, taking in the library and, taking up a spare place, joined a fascinating science school tour. Winchester has so much to offer and the opportunity every September to take in places that are not normally open, completely free, is one really not to be missed. We are just so lucky to have such a hard-working, very small team putting on this amazing festival year after year. Neil Spurgeon, Thornbury Close, Fareham.
And Robert Wellbeloved writes, "The Queen's important visit. I was very surprised that in the last two editions of the Hampshire Chronicle, no mention was made of the visit of Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip in November 1975 to formally open the new Independent Broadcasting Authority headquarters at Crawley Court. This was later privatised and became NTL and is now Arqiva. Not only was the opening of Crawley Court a very important part of the government policy of decentralisation of London at the time, but it also resulted in considerable job creation in Mid-Hampshire. It was a particularly memorable occasion for me, as I was introduced to the Queen, together with a number of other IBA staff." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Queen at Crawley Court in 1975. She's wearing a red coat and a black hat and, of course, had dark hair in those days, and is, with her gloved hand and handbag, is shaking hands with a gentleman with a gloved hand who has a huge row of medals along the front of his jacket. And that was from Robert Wellbeloved, Orchard Close, South Wanston.
Andrea Lodge writes about the need for cancer support. At the Macmillan Cancer Support Information Centre at University Hospital Southampton, we know that people living with cancer and their loved ones face more challenges today than most will ever have experienced in their lifetimes. Cancer diagnosis and treatment are tough enough, but 2022 has brought spiralling household bills on top of the existing financial impact of going through cancer, which reaches up to £891 a month on average to those affected. Add in lengthening waiting times arising from the post-pandemic treatment backlog, and the picture becomes darker still. We want people to know that the Macmillan Information Centre at University Hospital Southampton is there for you, doing whatever it takes to make sure every person with cancer in the Southampton area gets the help they need, be it financial, practical, emotional, or psychological. But we need your help to do this. I'm asking you to sign up now, if you can, to hold a Macmillan coffee morning or attend one of the local events happening in our area over the next few weeks. We're open Monday to Friday. And for more information or to make an appointment, telephone 02381 206 037. I'll give that number again at the end of the letter. If you're interested in volunteering at the centre, please call 0238 120 6503. Thank you to every one of you who will either hold or attend a Macmillan coffee morning this September, to help us support the 3 million people living with cancer in the United Kingdom. And the two telephone numbers were to make an appointment with the University Hospital Southampton's Macmillan Cancer Support thing. You ring 023 81 206 0037 02381 206037, or if you're interested in volunteering, 02381 206503. 02381 206503. And that came from Andrea Lodge, Macmillan Information and Support Centre Manager.
And James Anderson explores a climate problem. If one wonders why the progress of renewables is lackadaisical, Max Priesman, Letters, September 22nd, it is because governments have known for some time that getting to net zero is far beyond the capabilities of renewables. The discourse in the International Energy Agency has shifted from renewable to clean. Governments accept that fossil fuels must continue, and the great hope is that these fuels can be cleaned up by removing the carbon dioxide from their emissions. In effect, net zero is a massive bet on carbon capture and storage. The internet is awash with upbeat assessments of what might be possible and reticent about the energy effects. Carbon capture has been around for at least 50 years. It is considered successful when the CO2 captured has economic value, for example, to force more gas from wells. As a waste product, the process is akin to rolling a ball downhill for energy, only to push it back up while recapturing the carbon, and is close to zero-sum game. The Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis describes it as a pipe dream. The CEO of Eurasian Resources Group, a miner, says that 60 new lithium mines and 40 new cobalt mines will be needed in the next 10 years to keep up with demand for batteries. He adds cheerfully that just for electric cars, we'll have to mine more material than has ever been mined in the history of the world. Ouch. Net zero appears to be on track to be more harmful than the climate change problem it seeks to solve. Is it that our MP, Steve Bryan, is not coming clean with us about delivering net zero, or is he simply struggling to grasp the issues? James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston, Winchester.
And Chris Gillam writes, Truss insanity, query? I observed a butterfly caught within our fruit cage, interminably fluttering back and forth along one edge, seemingly unable to descry the wide open doorway to one side. Insects have limited finite state machine decisions in their makeup, so they cannot properly be classed within Einstein's definition of insanity, to repeat the same behaviour over and over again and expect different results. What, however, can we say about the Liz Truss government to excuse its manifest insanity? On the economy, the only comparable lesson of history is Anthony Barber's rush for growth, the boom and bust that led to the 1976 sterling crisis. The conditions now for such gambles are very different. In 1972, the world's resources seemed infinite, and Britain especially was starting to draw on the bonanza of easy North Sea oil. Now we know that extractable resources are finite and, moreover, come at enormous environmental cost. Economic growth has never been decoupled from these costs. Now, Truss gambles, not just by repeating a failed economic strategy, but by recklessly fueling the fires of planetary destruction. It is no accident that she has appointed actual climate change deniers, yes, such dinosaurs still exist, to major departments of state, including energy and transport. All environmental protection laws, all our COP26 commitment, all the decent standards of government are to be abandoned to give free rein to Truss's friends, the developers, profiteers and carpetbaggers, to enrich themselves at the expense of the poorest and the planet. Thatcher's infamous trickle-down selfishness is back. Truss drawing her moral compass on Dives rather than the Good Samaritan. The nasty party at its nastiest. Steve Bryan nailed his colours to a different mast. Will he now speak out against the Truss folly and immorality? Or is it back to, whatsoever king may reign, I'll be the vicar of Bray, sir? The butterfly, incidentally, finally found the finite state machine decision that changed its course towards the open doorway, so it was adaptable enough to escape. Unfortunately, we cannot expect an intelligent change of behaviour by our unelected rulers. We can only pray for their early and well-deserved extinction. That was from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Car caution. We're ending with a thank you. A couple of weeks ago, Mary Tutton writes, a kind gentleman who was passing my home rang my bell to tell me I'd left my garage open, and he didn't want me to lose my mower or anything else. I assured him Oliver's battery was such a safe place. However, I've now changed my mind, as gradually all my 10 lights that highlighted the edge of my grass so I could back my car in safely when it was dark have vanished. This week, my 2 quite heavy traffic cones have disappeared. They were given to me by my daughter because a car had backed into my drive and left a dent in my car. Mary Tutton, Austin Avenue, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And that was the last of the letters for this week. Thank you to all of our contributors. Noel is now going to read an alternative look at the news because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And I've got 3 items. The first one, M&S shut the door on a handy little shortcut. It's something that's been irking Belgarum. We love to shop in M&S in Winchester's High Street. I mean, where better to pick up some posh grub and for a few moments pretend we can actually afford to shop there? We know Poundland is just a hop away, so is Iceland, but there's something seductive about the old-fashioned nature of M&S. However, we've been less than impressed with the removal of access to the doors onto Middlebrook Street. This handy cut through from the High Street to Middlebrook Street not only provides a few moments of warmth on a cold day, or aircon on a hot one, it's also a pretty handy way to while away a few moments when we're waiting for our bus. See, we told you we really can't afford to shop in M&S. Much to our dismay, we see these doors have been closed. Baskets barricade us from getting to them. Our much-worn path has been disrupted. A sign-up says they're out of action. Ask staff, and they say they are broken. To be fair, we have seen a few workmen hitting them with spanners, but the rumour mill has it that they have been purposely shut to stop shoplifters. Whatever the reason, we now have to traipse round. It seems mightily unfair. And the second item, tight contest, Duck's Bottom versus car park space. A duck's bottom, a drum or bark on a tree, these may be things that are less tight than the car parking spaces in Brooks Shopping Centre. Belgarum noted with delight our editor's recent post on Winchester Rants about her car and its proximity to the concrete bollards. This prompted her to ask, is there anything tighter? Well, we've known a few people over the years that would arguably give those spaces a run for their money. Excuse me. Comments popped up on the Facebook post from people who have found themselves in a tight spot, excuse the pun, in the underground car park over the years. Many a times we've been into the Brooks and squeezed in, often wondering if the closeness was due to our expanding waistlines rather than a problem with the small spaces. A visiting friend quipped about the tight spaces the other week, and we managed to hold in any witty comeback. Anyway, we digress. Back to the original question. Does anyone know of anything tighter than a Brooks Shopping Centre car parking space? Answers on a postcard, please. Well, students, this is the third one. Students' healing hands go down a treat. Runners in this year's Winchester Half Marathon were able to get free post-race massage from physiotherapy students. Winchester Marathon returned on Sunday, September the 25th, with a hilly 10K or half marathon. The University of Winchester was the finish line partner for the fourth time. And this year, it involved its health clinic based at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park, where students on the physiotherapy degree work alongside accredited physiotherapy practitioners as part of their studies. Thanks to the Winchester Health Clinic, runners received a free and well-deserved post-race massage.
This week's first person is by Kimberly Barber, and Jane's going to read it.
And it's headed The Missing Chronicles. 250 years ago, the editor wrote the following in the first ever edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. The editor of the paper presents his respects to the editor of the Salisbury Journal, is much obliged to him for the very polite and unsolicited manner in which he has advertised the Hampshire Chronicle, and also for exercising his friendly and goodwill in pointing out those weight particulars which may be applied to his success. At the same time, takes this method of declaring to the public at large the important objections which the Salisbury editor raised to this publication, as well as other objections which may hereafter be urged, shall be obviated by an unwearied attention to those material points of recommendation, great candour and integrity. Phew. I find it only fitting that after 9 months of editing the Hampshire Chronicle, and a mere 250 years after those words were published, that my remit has been extended. Earlier this month, I took on the role of editor at the Salisbury Journal and its smaller title, the Forest Journal. They join the Hampshire Chronicle, Romsey Advertiser, Basingstoke Gazette and Andover Advertiser in my stable. When I joined in December, my predecessor Bill Brown, who previously looked after all six titles, retired soon after. His role was broken up and I took on the Hampshire Weeklies. Since then, it's been great to build two teams, one in Winchester and one in Basingstoke, and to help the titles to work together, meaning we can report on local matters with greater efficiency than ever before. We use the reporter's time wisely, often sharing stories or ideas, and all pitch in to help the other titles when needed. I must have made the job look easy, and it was a compliment when I was asked to take on the Salisbury Journal too. Over the last few months, I have often spoke to the acting editor of the Salisbury Journal, Andy Martin, for advice. He's had a long career in journalism and certainly knows his way around a local newspaper. In fact, I could almost have written the same words the 1722 editor. Funny how, as history has a way of repeating itself. Talking of the first edition, it was a joy to see. Last month, I had the chance to pore over the first edition when I took a trip up to the Hampshire Record Office, that's the HRO, in Sussex Street, ahead of our 250th anniversary celebrations. The Record Office is a wonderful place, and if you have any interest in local history, you definitely should visit. We're very lucky to have it in Winchester. As well as a full archive of the Hampshire Chronicle up until around 2009, you can find other titles too, such as the Romsey Advertiser and the Basingstoke Gazette, and all the other Hampshire titles that have come and gone over the years. The Record Office is run by the council and is free to visit. The staff there are wonderfully helpful. On my visit, it was a shame to hear that the Record Office used to receive its copies of the Hampshire Chronicle from the library. However, that arrangement stopped for whatever reason, and there is now a black hole in the Chronicle's archives. Our historian, Barry Sherlock, has been looking for the gap, and has been looking into the gap and is passionate about filling it to ensure the Hampshire Chronicle continues to be correctly archived and catalogued for future generations. He said that now from 1772 to 2009, or perhaps 2010 June, the Chronicle is on microfilm in HRO. After that, unbound, unscanned, hard copies to July 2015 are held by HRO. Then the archive stops. Everything moves digital, and while we have digital versions of those pages, the physical editions are seemingly not in existence. Barry said, "If there are still any gaps, no doubt these could be filled. I know of at least one person who has a collection of hard copies from the last 7 to 10 years. There may be others." So, before we embark on our mission to plug this gap, I throw the question to you, how best to fill it. Are there any avid Chronicle readers with a neatly organised collection of Hampshire Chronicles from 2015 to 2022? Do please get in touch.
And it's over to Heather, because she's got the editorial comment.
And the editor writes, "The High Street's changing again." The High Street is known for having some of the highest rent prices in the county. Therefore, it is perhaps not surprising that businesses come and go quite frequently. In the Chronicle this week, we have stories on the plans for the Debenhams unit, the imminent opening of one of the businesses in the former Next unit, and the closures of two popular shops. Clothes shop Jewels closed on September the 24th, leaving another unit up for grabs. Closs and Hamblin will be missed when it closes within the next 2 years. Its windows displays have always been a pleasant sight, even if their Christmas one is about 2 months too early. One half of the Next unit will be opening on October the 8th as F45 Training, which will offer something different. And finally, the Debenhams unit is set to become three cafes or restaurants. Exciting times ahead for the High Street.
Now there are a couple of theatrical things happening locally. On October the 1st to the October the 8th at 7:45, there's a Sunday matinee at 2nd of October as well at 2:30pm, Winchester Dramatic Society is presenting Educating Rita by Willie Russell at the Chesil Theatre. This was first performed in 1980 at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and it won the Olivier Award for Best Comedy of the Year. And this particular version has Gary Nicholson as Frank and Francesca Waters as Rita, and the director is Terry Lohr. If you're interested in going to this, the tickets are £16 for adults, £10 for students and under 18s. And for more information, go to chesiltheatre.org.uk. Now, there are a couple of productions at the Theatre Royal. On Tuesday, October the 4th and Wednesday, October the 5th, is The Canterville Ghost by Oscar Wilde. Then on Thursday, October the 13th to Saturday, October the 15th, the Black Eyed Theatre is presenting Sherlock Holmes, The Valley of Fear. For more information on both productions, please visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk, or you can call 01962 840 440. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 30th of September at 7:04am and begins at 6:46pm. And on Wednesday the 5th of October, it ends at 7:12am and begins at 6:35pm. And we'll continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, the headline is "Residents Make Light of Scarecrow Crimes." A number of scarecrows have been beheaded while another disappeared entirely, inspiring a new scarecrow crime scene. Droxford Scarecrow Festival returned this month for its third instalment, following its success in 2019 with nearly 100 scarecrows dotted around the village for the two-week display. But on the night of Sunday, September the 18th, one scarecrow went missing and hasn't been seen since. Following the incident, a number of scarecrows have also been brutally beheaded, including the head of one resident's Jim Carrey the Mask scarecrow. A concerned resident posted on Facebook, "Bit of a strange post. Droxford is currently enjoying its third scarecrow festival, and tonight one of the best scarecrows in the village, a member of the Flax Pistols, has been stolen from the front of the creator's house. She was one of four and an absolute genius scarecrow. The owner would love her back to join other members of the band." Creator Richard Keohane, a cabinet maker from the village, has made light of the situation by quickly turning the display into a crime scene, with a forensic scientist and Detective Inspector Gummidge investigating the missing scarecrow and interviewing the suspects. Richard has taken part every year with his 11-year-old daughter, Ottilie. The pair currently have their scarecrows on display in the village High Street, outside Richard's uncle's house. The creative local went as far as to add tears to the remaining band member and boyfriend to the missing scarecrow named Sheena Ramone. The punk rocker scarecrow was stolen around 7:30pm, with Richard's uncle suspecting it was a drive-by incident as he heard a car screech off the road. Within an hour of receiving his uncle's call, Richard had come up with a new idea and made the two extra scarecrows. The cabinet maker, who utilises waste by recycling leftover materials from past jobs, continued, "The reception has been mad, really funny and taken really well. Sheena was dressed quite nicely with a leather jacket on, but it was all from the charity shop, so it's of no great significance to me. Nobody is really upset about anything that has gone missing. It's just a shame that it was my daughter's favourite one, and she really put some effort into her face on that one. The Droxford Scarecrow Makers have not been deterred from taking part in future festivals, and the show went on as planned, finishing up at the weekend. And there are two pictures before and after. There's one picture of Sheena Ramone sitting on the ground, looking very much like a punk rocker, with her boyfriend standing there looking very serious. And then above that, there's a picture of the newly created crime scene with a forensic scientist all bending down and examining the area, and D.I. Gummidge questioning the sad boyfriend Billy." And that's brilliant.
Well, I think I have to follow that one with the Oliver's Battery Scarecrow competition, which didn't have the same problems. Contest something to crow about? The winners of a Winchester Scarecrow competition, featuring chefs, sports stars, dinosaurs and a man looking for moles, again, have been announced. The Oliver's Battery Annual Scarecrow Competition took place from September the 16th to the 25th, with residents recycling what they could ahead of Winchester Green Week. Following past success, Oliver's Battery Parish Council expanded the competition to include three categories with the new addition of a group category. The week-long event saw entries from the Women's Institute, the Brownies, Oliver's Battery Countryside Group and more. The cream of the crop was announced last Sunday with Oliver's Battery Countryside Group winning the group category with their entry, Holy Moly. A Tyrannosaurus Rex took the top spot in the junior category, while the adult category was won by Pamela and Ridge Living Life on the Hedge. The event organiser said thank you to everyone who entered and special thanks for the support of Oliver's Battery Parish Council. And this is inevitably surrounded by pictures of some of the scarecrows, we were not crows at all, from Oliver's Battery. A very, very pink lady in a running suit, looking very happy. Not a real lady, I hasten to add, a scarecrow lady. The Tyrannosaurus Rex winner of the junior category is brilliant. A huge, stuffed, beaming Tyrannosaurus with great, huge, sharp teeth. Several others, including a film group's entry, a man sitting there, a stuffed man, sitting there with a great big camera filming everything that was going on. And rather nice one, which is the Fat Cat Developers, Inc. making a point. And this is a great big fat cat in a suit with a tie and a smart shirt. And definitely a cat's head with whiskers, next to a sign saying Countryside, not Houses, and he's holding a sign saying Fat Cat Developers, Inc., and underneath his chair is a huge sack with a pound sign on it.
Mum's Scale Summit to boost school funds, and there's a picture of them all sitting triumphantly at the summit of southern Britain's highest mountain, Penavan, in the Brecon Beacons, having climbed to the top. A group of Sparsholt school mums took on a mountainous mission to raise some vital funds to improve their children's education. 20 mums, each with kids at Sparsholt Church of England Primary School, took on a 16-kilometre trek through the Brecon Beacons, including four peaks and many ups and downs over 7 hours. The charitable parents were hoping to raise £3,000 towards Sparsholt Church of England School. The mums, aged 35 to 55, have been busy clocking up the miles across the Hampshire countryside ahead of the challenge last Saturday, September the 24th. Participant and GoFundMe organiser Nikki Harris said, "Over the years as a school community, we've worked hard to do all that we can to ensure that all of our children are able to benefit from additional experiences and resources that the school itself is unable to fund. School budgets are incredibly tight. Post-COVID, we felt that we needed to do something as a school community, as we'd missed the opportunity over recent years. And in light of increasing staff and energy costs, we knew that anything we could do to enhance the learnings and curriculum and add value would be welcome. Previously, we've held charity auctions, organised fun runs, and so we wanted to do something different. And September seemed like the ideal opportunity to get together. Start of the new school year, weather's usually okay, and so the perfect opportunity to travel a little further afield and push ourselves while taking in some beautiful scenery. Following the trek on Saturday, the group have surpassed their £3,000 target for the charity Friends of Sparshot School. The final total will contribute towards the redevelopment of the school's pond area, subsidising some planned school trips and events to make them affordable to everyone, and a new kitchen learning space so that all children can participate in practical food lessons. The school in Woodman Lane has just 135 pupils across Key Stage 1 and 2 and relies heavily on fundraising and donations. In the last few years, parents have raised money to help the school undertake major projects such as redevelopment of an outside learning area, new playground equipment, and upgrading the IT suite and library. Now, apart from raising funds, the Mountain Mums are hoping to inspire their children to try new challenges.
Refugee call. A Winchester City Councillor has called for hosts under the Homes for Ukraine scheme to receive top-up payments to help with the cost of living crisis. Former Refugees Minister Lord Richard Harrington said he was lobbying the Treasury very hard to double the £350 a month thank you payment before he stepped down from his post earlier this month as part of a government reshuffle which saw Liz Truss named the new Prime Minister. Lord Harrington said the increase was needed to help hosts continue past the initially agreed 6 months while inflation, rising interest rates and energy bills spiral. In the meantime, some local authorities have taken the decision to issue top-up payments to help hosts. The city's sanctuary champion, Councillor John Tippett Cooper, has echoed Lord Harrington's calls and further challenged the County Council to implement similar measures. He said, "Lord Harrington raised concerns about the impact of the cost of living crisis on families supporting Ukrainian refugees across the country. In Winchester, many families will be feeling this cost of living squeeze acutely. The government needs to consider acting urgently to prepare a new package for both hosts and their Ukrainian guests. Hampshire County Council should also consider the possibility of topping up the monthly payments being made to host families, as other councils have done. For some refugees who arrived in Hampshire shortly after the war began in March, their agreements are now coming to an end, raising concerns that many families will be left looking for a more permanent arrangement in the coming months. Local authorities have been preparing for such eventualities. In Winchester, an initial £740,000 support package was allocated in June as part of the government scheme, which will be used to provide a specialised support team to help guests secure long-term housing, prevent homelessness, and work to smoothly integrate them into the community. Hampshire is currently hosting over 1,000 families as part of the government's Homes for Ukraine scheme. To date, less than 100 sponsor arrangements have come to an end for a variety of reasons. This includes where families have decided to seek their own independent accommodation to further assist with their integration into Hampshire life. as of August the 15th, 252 hosts in Winchester had completed the process of matching with Ukrainian families, welcoming a total of 536 individuals across the district. As per a recent finance and performance report, the City Council has supported three rematches. Some 71 Ukrainians have been provided with housing advice. 12 have approached the council because they believed to be threatened with homelessness, and 23 have been supported to apply onto Hampshire Homes and Choice.
Here we have last chance for old locomotive. Visitors to the Watercress Line's Autumn Steam Gala event will have the last chance to take a ride on one of the classic school's class locomotives. The boiler certificate of the school's class 30925 Cheltenham is due to expire soon, meaning the Autumn Steam Gala will be a final opportunity for visitors to get on board behind the much-loved engine. The class, named by the public schools in the area, were the most powerful 440-type locomotives to operate in this country for passenger and goods duties. 440 refers to the wheel arrangements of four leading, unpowered wheels, four driving wheels, and no trailing wheels. The gala weekend, from Friday, October the 7th to Sunday, October the 9th, will also showcase a number of home fleet steam locomotives with a broader timetable of unlimited hop-on, hop-off rides, running between Alsford, Ropley, Medstead and Foremarks and Alton stations each day. The Autumn Steam Gala will give visitors an insight into restoration projects at the Watercress Line's Ropley workshop and yard, including behind-the-scenes tours, demonstrations and society stands and displays at the station. The Somerset and Dorset Railway Trust will also be presenting artefacts at the Old Goods Shed Museum in Alsford. The Heritage Railway Attraction CEO Amanda Squires said, "Join us for the Autumn Steam Gala event and turn back time to the railway's golden era. The weekend is a unique opportunity to see a brilliant selection of our home fleet locomotives up close and take a 10-mile ride on board through our glorious countryside. The main attraction will be a fond farewell to our school's class engine 30925 Cheltenham, so don't miss out." Cheltenham was built in 1934 at Eastley Works. In 2010, the locomotive returned to Eastley, where specialist work was conducted to remove asbestos. The train became one of the main attractions at Mid-Hants Railway's Autumn Steam Spectacular at the Watercress Line in September 2012. Cheltenham is one of three school's class locomotives that's been preserved. The last of the class was withdrawn from service in 1962. As a living history attraction, the Watercress Line provides a steam-hauled train service from March to October and throughout December, with standard running days and many special activities, including Day Out with Thomas or Wizard Week or Steam Illuminations and Steam Galas. And this includes a photograph of the Cheltenham withdrawn from service in 1962 and its huge black engine at the front with red stoppers down beneath and the 440 wheels.
High hopes for zoo arrival. And there's a picture of a giraffe looking extremely comfortable. Mm-hmm. He's sitting down and he's looking around from the nice point of his top of his long neck at his new surroundings and looking very comfortable and at home. Oh, his name is Maburo. After two giraffe deaths this summer, Marwell Zoo has reason for celebration. Three-year-old Maburo arrived in specialist transport at the zoo near Colden Common earlier in the month. Maburo is the first male giraffe at Marwell for 5 years and will live with the four resident females, Makeda, Krista and Ruby, who were all born at the zoo. I think that means there's either only three resident females or we've forgotten to give one of them a name. The young male has moved to the zoo in Thompson's Lane with the hope that he will eventually breed. However, it all depends on how Maburo interacts with his new herd. Keepers report that he's settled into his new home well after the journey from Chester Zoo. Senior animal keeper Adam Ford said, "Maburo's arrival is very exciting for Marwell and the future of the Rothschild's giraffes, furthering Marwell's in-situ conservation programmes. He is settling in well with the girls and is proving to be a big character already. He has many features which distinguish him from the females. He's very large ossicones, which is what they call the horns on a giraffe's head, and he has a perfect love heart on his left cheek."
Oh. Rare Cromwell letter for auction. A rare letter written by Oliver Cromwell in 1648 is being sold at an online auction. In the letter, Cromwell discusses intimate family affairs such as his son's marriage and the fate of his two younger daughters. The document is to be sold by auction house Lion and Turnbull in Edinburgh. Cromwell led the parliamentary forces against the royalists in the English Civil War and oversaw the execution of King Charles I in January 1649. The letter is addressed to Cromwell's friend Richard Norton, who served in the parliamentary army a month before Cromwell led English troops to a bloody victory over the Scots and Royalists at the Battle of Preston. Cromwell requests that Norton communicate his wishes to his son's future father-in-law, Richard Major. Cromwell writes, and it's not the modern spelling, "I desire you to carry this business with all privacy. I beseech you to do so as you love me. Let me entreat you not to lose a day herein, that I may know Mr. Major's mind. I much rely on you." Bidding for the letter was to begin at £5,000 and was part of Lion and Turnbull's rare books, maps and manuscripts and photographs sale. It also featured was an album of 120 letters by a range of Victorian figures, including Charles Dickens, William Thackeray, Robert Browning and William Holman Hunt. Dominic Somerville Brown, Lion and Turnbull's rare books, maps and manuscripts and photographs specialist, said, "We anticipate international interest in this particular auction, given the significance of these exceptional items, including Cromwell's letter, and the two albums which have been in the Kinnear family for generations. These important documents and images capture the personalities and times of a range of hugely important historical figures," he added. "It's always the human stories and personal touches which capture the public's imagination."
And here we have council in pledge to help needy. Civic chiefs have announced a £200,000 support package to help Winchester residents through the impending cost of living crisis. The scheme is completely separate from central government funding and will supplement any additional help from Downing Street. Revealing the plans at a cabinet meeting on Thursday, September the 22nd, Winchester City Councillor Paula Ferguson, cabinet member for Community and Housing, said, "Winchester City Council has a strong track record of providing support when people most need it, whether that was during the recent pandemic or by providing asylum and sanctuary to people who have sought safety and a home in our district. These supportive values are more than just words. Through this cost of living intervention, we aim to reach as many residents as possible who may be struggling, providing them with the help and support they need to stay warm and put food on their tables this winter. As part of the cash injection, an emergency grant fund will be shared between the council's partners who can provide advice and practical support to residents. This includes help to reduce and manage energy bills, access benefits and grants, and access food and other types of emergency support. A cost of living summit will also take place, bringing together organisations from across the city to discuss how they can do more to guide residents through the upcoming challenges, which will include understanding the potential need to provide a network of warm, safe spaces this winter. The authority has said a dedicated cost of living website will collate useful links and information for those needing support, while council leaders are further planning to write to central government to call for additional support for those most in need. Councillor Ferguson added, By working with our partners, we hope to maximise our efforts and our impact, ensuring our residents can access the information and support they need quickly and easily. We will also be writing to the government to call on them to provide additional support for those most severely affected locally. The message we want to send to our residents, many of whom we know are worried about the months ahead, is that we are here to support you. More information will be available on the Council's website in the coming days. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Martin Todd and Councillor Paula Ferguson, who are the two mostly dealing with the revealed 200,000 plan for supporting the needy.
Angling family hooked on fundraiser close to their hearts. A family that's been hit with more than their fair share of cancer is hosting a 48-hour fishing match, 10 years on from the first event. Ian and Victoria Palmer from Stanmore hosted their first ever fishing match for cancer research in 2012, following the loss of Ian's sister Debbie, who died with breast cancer. The 10th anniversary fishing event is set to take place in October, with 38 anglers being sponsored to take part in the two-day match. The Palmers are hoping to raise £10,000 for the cancer charity this year to mark 10 years since they began. The fishermen will begin at midday on Friday, October the 7th, at Willow Park Fishery in Aldershot. The competitors will take a break the following afternoon to take part in a raffle and auction to raise more money for the charity. And the match will end at midday on Sunday, October the 9th, before the trophy is presented. This year the event will feature its biggest ever prize, a five-night fishing trip for two in Spain, donated by Paul Shields from On the Ebro. Other donations from local companies such as Parker Bates, Angling Direct in Southampton and Tesco in Winnell will be used in the raffle and auction. Ian has always been a keen fisherman, and he's survived Hodgkin lymphoma twice. His sister Debbie was 44 when she died in April 2012. Mr. Palmer was away fishing at the time when he received the call from his sister that the cancer was terminal. Ian's wife Vicky said, "My husband was away fishing, and he thought, what can I do to try and help fight cancer? So he came up with the idea of a charity fishing match." The debut match in 2012 at a fishery in Ampfield was intended to be a one-off, but it developed into a yearly event. The fundraising event then, before then, became biennial in 2016 so that Victoria could juggle organising and working full-time. Since its beginning, the Fishathon has raised around £15,000 for the cause close to the family's hearts. As well as Ian's sister, the family has lost grandparents and an uncle to cancer, while Ian's brother Tony, who helped set up the Fishathon, is currently recovering from bowel cancer treatment. Mrs. Palmer added, "It seems to have hit our family more than our fair share, and we are going to do whatever we can to help."
Flats planned as fabric shop, latest city centre casualty. A Winchester High Street shop is set to close within the next 2 years. Closs & Hamblin has been told the building's owners will not renew the lease when it expires in December 2024. The much-loved fabric and home accessories shop and cafe, well known for its window displays, is believed to be looking for smaller premises in the city. C&H was approached for comment but has not responded. The building, occupied by C&H and Rick Stein Restaurant, was bought by Winchester-based property firm Gentian Developments in 2021. Gentian director Nick Eakins said C&H has not paid their rent since June, which he described as disappointing. This was due to an admin oversight, and they are now paying it again. C&H, based in Kent, has recently moved their Tunbridge Wells and Horsham branches into smaller units. C&H departure will allow Gentian to develop the site. Mm-hmm. Rick Stein's lease runs for another 16 years. The firm proposes to retain retail on the ground floor, but develop the second and third floors and potentially add a fourth story for a total of 16 flats, subject to planning permission.
Hell of cancer fight. A Hampshire couple whose seven-year-old son was diagnosed with a form of blood cancer have described their family's experience as a tsunami of emotions. Jasper Johnson from Albrook was diagnosed with Burkitt non-Hodgkin lymphoma earlier this year after experiencing stomach issues for around 3 months. The Colden Common Primary School pupil is now cancer-free, and Jasper and his parents are sharing their story to encourage people to wear a gold ribbon badge to help more children and young people beat cancer. The badge is the awareness symbol of Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, available from Cancer Research UK shops and selected TK Maxx stores. Jasper first began to show symptoms in November last year when he experienced tummy pains, weight loss and sickness. Brenda, his mother, said, "The doctor checked him over and they said there was no temperature, no diabetes, they couldn't feel anything and said it was constipation. He was given some medicine to take things moving, but that seemed to make things worse." With the symptoms continuing over the next 2 months, Brenda and Jasper's dad, Richard, continued to seek regular medical advice. Richard, an air traffic controller, explained after initially taking their son to A&E and a series of tests and examinations were carried out, doctors established what was going on. Richard said, "We sat down with three doctors and they explained that the offending piece of tissue they'd analysed had come back with some abnormalities. I asked them outright, 'Is it cancer?' The surgeon replied, 'Yes.' I asked if it was terminal, but he said it was treatable. The rest was just a blur." Unfortunately for the family, just as Jasper was due to start his chemotherapy treatment in February, Brenda, Richard and Isabel, his sister, all tested positive for COVID. Brenda said, "The parents and teachers up at the school were amazing throughout. When Jasper was diagnosed, they did a collection and raised £750 so that we could get Jasper an iPad. His iPad was one of the main things that got him through his treatment." Because Jasper's cancer had been caught early and he only required 2 rounds of chemotherapy, the duration of his treatment from surgery to the scan results lasted just 75 days. Richard and Brenda are incredibly grateful that it was both short and successful, but say the emotional toll of the diagnosis will have a lifelong impact. And there is a photograph of the family all cheering with happiness. And in front of them, of course, is little Jasper, the youngest. And he's got his hand high up in the air and is beaming and shouting out. And he has, I think it's a dragon rather than a dinosaur, also beaming on the front of his T-shirt.
Future of the plucky little house martin is in our hands. Last week I was at a road in central Southampton where residents have been working together to create a safe place for house martins to breed in the summer. Up and down what is otherwise a typical urban street, many of the houses have nest boxes. And this year at least 7 nests were successful with new young fledged and now departed for Africa. House martins are a truly amazing bird. They arrive from the Democratic Republic of Congo in early April, having left their African wintering grounds in mid-February to make their way around the Sahara and up through southern Europe. Some arrive through the Bosphorus and Turkey, and others come in via the Rock of Gibraltar and then up to the coasts of Spain, Portugal and France. Shortly after getting here, they quickly begin to build a nest, and a typical pair of house martins will mix over 1,000 small pellets of mud with saliva to create small balls to make the nest. Like concrete, the saliva contains an enzyme that, when mixed with wet mud, will eventually bake rock hard in the sunlight. If the season goes well, house martins will have 2 broods of 2 to 4 chicks, and the parents will often remain in the UK till when into October before heading south again. As with many of Hampshire's birds, house martins are in real trouble. Over the past 30 years, the population has fallen dramatically. As the climate changes, so insect numbers have plummeted, and that is the main diet for house martin chicks. It has also become harder to find wet mud for nesting, not only due to the drier springs, but also to the change in farming practices. With house martins in big trouble, many people have answered a call from the Wildlife Trust and the RSPB to help this incredible bird. And across Hampshire, residents have started to buy artificial nest boxes to put up under their eaves. The artificial boxes are designed to look similar to natural house martin boxes, but they don't need the birds to go in search of mud. There's a second benefit too. In the event of a major rainstorm in summer, and we do have some of those now, the artificial nests will survive, while the natural nests have a tendency to collapse. Some people are combining the new nest boxes with a no-mow spring and summer on their lawns, maximising the variety of insects available for the young birds to eat. House martins are now on the move back to Africa, and as they leave, it is worth thinking about how we could help them next year. This is a great example of a bird that will not survive climate change in the country without our direct intervention. The future for house martins literally lies in our hands, and there are many sites online which sell house martin boxes, and even more that provide native wildflower seed to help create attractive flowering areas in our gardens for insects.
Oxygen chamber godsend for long COVID sufferers. Long COVID sufferers have spoken out how oxygen therapy was aided in a new lease of life after years of suffering throughout the pandemic. Just before lockdown of March 2020, Imogen Phelan and Sarah Craddy both caught what they thought was a nasty cold. Their GPs told them they would be back to their normal selves by 14 days, but by the following week, Sarah was signed off sick. Symptoms became severe, and Sarah had to choose between brushing her teeth or her hair before going back to bed. She said, "I took a long weekend off before lockdown because I wasn't feeling right. I slept all weekend because I felt rough. By Thursday, I signed myself off sick at work and didn't end up going back. I couldn't eat, speak, or clean my teeth." As Imogen's symptoms became worse, she found herself forced to choose between making it to the bathroom or the kitchen for a cup of tea. She said, "Once you got out of bed, it would be a trade-off between making it to the bathroom or the kitchen. Crawling around the house took all energy, and it went on for around 6 months. My GP brushed it off as my bloods were coming back as normal." A year later, Imogen and Sarah booked a hyperbaric oxygen therapy session at HYB02, that's HYB02, who are based on St Clement's Street. HYB02 is an oxygen chamber that allows patients to breathe 95% oxygen through a mask and tube. The oxygen then fills the body and its cells, helping the body to recover and heal at a quicker speed. Sarah said, "When I explain to people what the chamber is, they look at me with shock and horror that I get locked into a chamber for an hour. But when I explain what it's done, what it is, and what the environment here is like, they start to get a different opinion. After session three, I was so exhausted that I crawled up the stairs. It really floored me. Session four, I came out still feeling exhausted. Session five, my energy levels started picking up, and then it was an trajectory after that. After session 12, I went out on my mountain bike for the evening. I cycled up a mountain, and I could breathe for the first time in 2 years, fully, deeply, and without any pain in my lungs. It was incredible. I actually cried." Sarah and Imogen have both been coming to the chambers since March 2021 and have had 10 sessions back-to-back with the support of Maurice McDonough and operations manager Steve Bridgewater. They then had an extra 3 sessions for a couple of weeks and now have 1 session per month for a top-up. And there's a picture of the 2 smiling women sitting next to this science fiction-looking chamber with lots of switches and HYB02 on the side.
And here we have Keeping Road Open, an Act of Insanity. A Winchester civic chief has branded as an act of insanity the idea of keeping two major roads open in the city. The current Andover Road is set to be closed to go through traffic once the new Andover Road in adjacent King's Barton estate opens in the coming years. The issue was raised at the Winchester Town Forum, with King's Barton residents calling for the old road to stay open to reduce traffic flows through the new estate. City Council leader Martin Todd said, "Having two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity in terms of urban planning and traffic planning. You can't have both, that makes no sense at all." He said he did understand the frustration of the residents of the new estate over a decision made in 2011 to divert the main road through the then unbuilt estate. The road through King's Barton, Winchester Avenue, is currently not fit for purpose. Councillor Todd said with the County Council, the city was looking to reduce traffic with more park and ride and encouraging cycling and walking. Mike Slynn of the King's Barton Residents Association told the forum, "It is not only residents of King's Barton, but also people living in Week and Hairstock who realise that if Andover Road is closed, their roads will be used as rat runs to the city centre." Andy Key of Cycle Winchester put a different view. He said it was vital that the old Andover Road was closed so it could become a major route for cyclists. "Having two routes into a city where there used to be one doesn't solve problems. It just means more traffic will fill both routes. More congestion at Carfax, more traffic to discourage cycling and blow a hole in the Winchester movement strategy." Another member of the public, Nigel Davison, speaking for residents of Hairstock Road, said they were concerned that any increase in traffic would increase on a road with a 40-mile-per-hour limit. Charles Crawford of Chilbolton Avenue said the limit on his road needed to be reduced from 40 miles to 30 miles per hour, as the number of residents has increased tenfold in recent years. Town Forum Chairman Mike Crask and the Hairstock Road, Stockbridge Road, Chilbolton Avenue, Romsey Road axis was education central, close to the many schools including Hairstock Primary, Henry Beaufort, Week Primary, Peter Simmons College, Westgate, Week Primary, King's and St Peter's. "We need to do something before there is a serious accident," said Councillor Crask.
Dad who stabbed three people is spared jail. A man who stabbed three people with a multi-tool knife after leaving a Winchester nightclub has been spared jail because he was acting in self-defence, a judge has ruled. Christopher Morliver, aged 41, was cleared of three counts of wounding after using the gift from his wife to warn off the attackers during an incident on July the 25th last year. He did, however, plead guilty to possessing a bladed article and was given 80 hours of unpaid work. Sentencing the husband and father at Winchester Crown Court on Friday, September the 23rd, Judge Adam Feast, KC, said, "I've seen the video of the circumstances, and the Crown rightly accepted you were the victim. Nevertheless, you were carrying a prohibited article and admitted that to the police." The court was shown CCTV footage of Morliver of Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, dancing on his own in a vodka nightclub on Upper Brook Street shortly before 3 o'clock in the morning. At points in the video, Martin Booth, prosecuting, said he could be seen dancing with a female member of the trio, although nothing appropriate or untoward took place. A friend of the woman's boyfriend then intervened and pulled her away. A short while afterwards, further footage captured Morliver walking past Primark towards a taxi rank, chatting with the same woman. They were closely followed by her boyfriend and his friend, who approached them in a purposeful way. A third CCTV camera outside the book centre captured both men tussling with Morliver. During that melee, the court was told he had used the locking knife on his multi-tool to stab both of the attackers, wounding the female in the process, before running away towards the High Street, where he was stopped by a security guard. The court heard, when police attended the chaotic scene, Morlover admitted wounding the men, but insisted it was in self-defence. He was arrested and interviewed under police caution. Mr. Booth said the three people who weren't named in court suffered puncture wounds and broadly superficial injuries. One of the men sustained nerve damage in his hand. The judge recognised Morlover hadn't intentionally armed himself in case of trouble, but was just carrying it for sentimental reasons. However, he did say multi-tools do have capability to cause serious injury. Alongside the community order for unpaid work, he imposed costs of £300 and a statutory surcharge.
Lift on fracking ban leaves area at risk. Winchester is at risk of significant oil and gas exploration, including fracking, new evidence has shown. New analysis of areas in the country which have been granted a licence by the government for oil and gas exploration has found Hampshire faces at least 9 new fracking sites. The site's total size of areas covered by a licence equates to a staggering 34,868 football pitches. Winchester is the worst affected area in the county, with 5 sites permitted for drilling, covering more than one quarter of the constituency. This comes as the government plans to officially lift a ban on fracking for shale gas by reviewing the level of earthquakes allowed at sites. The British Geological Society recently published a report which refuses to endorse fracking. The House of Commons Environment Committee has previously warned that fracking poses a risk to groundwater and a risk of polluting surface water. The city's Liberal Democrats say the decision to lift the ban on fracking represents a major U-turn for the government, with the Chancellor having previously stated that gas drilling would not bring gas prices and energy bills down. Liberal Democrat candidate for Winchester, Danny Chambers, said, "Our treasured green land is at risk of being ripped up by dangerous and unnecessary drilling."
Dog owners struggle with rising costs. The UK's leading dog welfare charity is receiving unprecedented numbers of inquiries from desperate dog owners who feel they've run out of options. Dogs Trust, which has 3 rehoming centres in the region, has warned that an overwhelming number of dog owners are turning to the charity. In recent months, the charity has received a record number of calls from people asking it to take in their dogs. Its August figures surpassed its previous record for the most inquiries in a single month, with almost 5,000 owners inquiring about its handover service. A poll conducted by YouGov shows the number of people looking to give up their dogs is placed. September's poll revealed that 46% of respondents in the South East thought they would find it more difficult to give their dog all they needed compared to before the cost of living crisis began. Vet bills continue to be the greatest cause for worry, with 56% of South East dog owners confirming it was their biggest financial canine concern for the coming year. Meanwhile, 16% of respondents were most worried about the cost of insurance, while 15% named dog food as their main worry. Dogs Trust CEO Owen Sharp said, "Dogs Trust has been receiving a shocking and unprecedented number of calls from dog owners asking us to take in their dogs because they feel they won't be able to see them through this crisis. Over the last month, we received on average 17 handover calls an hour from desperate owners."
Positive public response to the latest M3 upgrade plans. Hundreds of people have turned out to view fresh plans for the M3 junction near Winchester during a 2-day community exhibition at Tesco in Winnell. National Highways was at a Tesco Extra on Sunday, September the 25th and Monday, September the 26th, with representatives from contractors Volker Fitzpatrick and designer Stantec to meet residents. The scheme for an update to Junction 9 has been planned since 2018, with a public consultation taking place in 2019. It is now estimated to cost between £190 and £210 million. John Roos, the senior project manager, said, "On Sunday we had around 200 people in. Monday around 188 more came along, so it's been a really good response. And the public have really appreciated the opportunity to look at the plans, talk to someone and understand how the whole proposal stitches together. It helps them understand what construction would look like in terms of duration and the likely impact. Also, beyond the actual engineering of the scheme, footpaths, rights of way and the overall treatment of the environment has been part of the conversation again. A formal planning application is due to be submitted in November and work should start in spring 2024 and finish in 2027. Further design work has seen environmental changes brought in, such as revised earthworks, the removal of the site compound at Christmas Hill, and the boundary moved so it does not encroach onto Winnall Moors Nature Reserve. Other key changes include a new subway added next to the National Highways Depot, enhanced walking, cycling and horse riding routes, and revised signage. An extended southbound slip road onto the M3 will allow traffic to flow more smoothly and safely, chiefs say. The pause to the smart motorway scheme in April also meant adaptation had to be made. Mr. Roos said that if the scheme were to recommence, they would be well placed to avoid any delays. The new plan were met with mostly positive reaction from shoppers. David Linton from South Wanston said it's about time. It'll be great for the flow of the traffic. Jane and Michael Collins from Kingsworthy said they were pleased to see Winnall Moors were given greater protection. Jane said it is important and should have been done earlier. And Winchester MP Steve Bryan also paid a visit to the engagement van on Sunday. For more information, there is material online.
Council in warning on £900,000 overspend. Winchester City Council has forecast an overspend of more than £900,000 on its yearly budget as inflation continues to spiral. Civic chiefs say outgoings have increased beyond expectation since they set their financial plan in February this year, including very significant hikes in utility costs and pay. In its finance and performance report for the first financial quarter, ending June the 30th, the council calculated a projected spend overspend of £943,000. However, in the same report, it said that it had set aside a sufficient reserve balance to cover the forecast increased costs. Despite this, the council has called a fresh budget meeting on November the 15th to discuss the developing situation. Speaking at a cabinet meeting on Thursday, September 22nd, Councillor Martin Todd said, "This is a situation that has continued to develop and we will be having an extra cabinet meeting when we will discuss a revised medium-term financial strategy. This will be an overlook to reflect the impact extra inflation and energy costs have had on the City Council and the choices that may need to be made arising from that." Councillor Todd added, "We have not lived in such financial times for many years. Some of us may have memories of those inflationary days in the 70s and 80s. It will be challenging and it will force new decisions upon us, but we will be looking very closely at all the council's activities. Increases include contract inflation, which is now expected to average 7% over 2022 to 2023, up from the budgeted 4%. This would see an additional baseline cost of £326,000. Utility inflation was previously forecast to increase by up to 250%, which would spike council costs by around £300,000. The report further states car parking revenue is predicted at £7 million against a budget of £8.3 million. The council says the disparity is partly due to the reduction in season tickets. Tree works are expected to overspend by as much as £100,000 over the year due to the high volume of works currently being identified, while grounds maintenance, waste and recycling budgets are forecast to be overspent by £460,000. The report says a COVID contingency budget of £1,278 million offsets a significant proportion of the adverse forecast. A phased return to budgeted income levels was planned over a four-year period ending in 2023-24. There are also a few areas of income the authority is expecting to exceed expectations. Recycling is forecast to be £150,000 above budget, while net interest receivable is forecast to achieve an additional £300,000 of revenue.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 30th of September 2022. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.